Welcome to Nancy's Bookshelf, a program of conversation and readings with local and regional writers. Now, here's your host, Nancy Wigman.
My guest today is a native Californian. She lived in England and Canada and now lives in Chico. Joan Goudreau has written stories, articles, and poems which have appeared in numerous publications. She recently completed a Hedgebrook writing residency on Whidbey Island, Washington, where she wrote a memoir about her son with autism. The first chapter of this memoir was nominated for the 2012 Pushcart Prize. Her experience as a special education teacher and program specialist allows her to see the puzzle of autism from both the perspective of a parent and a professional. The title of her book is Strangers Together: How My Son's Autism Changed My Life. Joan Goudreau, welcome.
Thank you.
Now, you were living in Canada at the time you wrote this story.
Yes, this all took place in Ottawa, Ontario, in Canada.
And you lived in England also?
Yes, I did, but that was before children.
Oh, So you say before children, plural. So when you were living in Canada, Ian, your son with autism, was not your only child?
No, he was surrounded by two older sisters, and then later on a younger brother, but that's another book.
Well, tell me about this, the Hedgebrook Writing Residency on Whidbey Island.
Well, this is a wonderful opportunity for women writers. You apply and you submit your work, and then you wait and see if you're accepted. And I was so excited to go up to Whidbey Island. They have a whole village of little cabins, and I managed to stay at Susan Sarang's cabin. And you just stay out there and you can write, you can take walks, and then at night you come together with about six other authors and share your work and have wonderful, delicious meals prepared by the cook there from their garden.
It sounds like a dream. How long do you get to stay there?
Well, we all didn't want to leave. No one wanted to leave. I got to stay there for 3 weeks. But as I said, people want to stay on longer because it's not just for women writers. Any woman would just love that experience.
Now, had you already started writing your book before you went there, or did you start from what you got to Whidbey Island?
No, I was working on my rough draft and trying to get the stories kind of in order, just trying to sketch it out. And of course, those 3 weeks without any interruptions or distractions, I got a lot of work done.
Oh, that sounds ideal.
Yes.
Well, you find yourself then as you start your story, you're living in Ottawa, you're a single mother, and that alone sounds pretty challenging.
Well, somehow I write quite a few of these stories about winter, and that seemed to affect me and slow me down. That somehow, after the shock of Ian's diagnosis, my brain kind of froze up, and I use winter as an excuse. But actually, I think I was in kind of a daze or shock.
I would think that would be fairly typical of parents, because there's one point in the book where this expert is saying, you know, you're looking forward to this child and you have expectations for this child, hopes and dreams for this child. And that was all okay in age of one, age of two. And then what made you suspect that, I'm not so sure about my son?
Well, I knew that there was something wrong, but I didn't know what it was. And you have to remember that this was 30 years ago. So people weren't as familiar with autism, and they didn't really know at first what was wrong with him. And so,
and when you say they, you mean experts, doctors,
professionals,
people who, that's their job to know these things.
Exactly.
And even they said, oh, it's probably just
a speech delay. And so we'll send him for speech therapy in a kind of a group. And it didn't make sense to me, because besides the speech delay, he also had trouble relating to others. He seemed kind of locked in his own world. So
you consult experts and you say, I think my son is, I mean, he's not talking. And they say, oh, well, it's just delayed. And you suspect that, no, it's more than that. So why don't you read us a section of your book? This is early in your book. And again, this is 30 years ago that you're talking about.
The speech therapist told us not to worry. Einstein didn't talk until he was 5. Speech would come. It just needed coaxing with some kids. I wonder, did the 3-year-old Einstein reach from his high chair to the pantry and scream while his mother pleaded, "What do you want to eat?" Ian's sisters yell a duet. "What do you want, Ian?" It's a game the whole family can play. I hold up peanut butter, cereal, and canned pineapple one at a time, like a game show hostess trying to make each item look like a prize. Ian shakes his wet red face and reaches his arms even further toward phantom food we cannot see. This guessing game is simple and can be played anywhere. I guess he wants soup when he reaches towards the can and screams when I heat it. The game is over when Ian shoves his dish of untouched alphabet soup onto the floor. I clean the mess with a dirty mop that looks like Ian's hair, stringy with sweat. I stare at the letters tumbled on the linoleum. All these letters make no words or sense. There is no winner in this game.
My guest is Joan Goudreau, and she's reading from her memoir, Strangers Together, How My Son's Autism Changed My Life. And this scene that you described sounds so stressful if it occurred only rarely. Just to have it occur once or twice, something like that would be stressful. But this was fairly typical, it seems like.
Well, this is just the beginning. And and afterwards, when he was diagnosed, it was stressful. And I sort of went into shock. And I felt very confused. I felt trapped. I have a story in here, and it talks about being in a maze. And that's kind of what I felt like. It was that I was trapped, and I wanted to escape. And the only way I could escape is kind of through my imagination and my mind. Obviously, I couldn't get a babysitter and just leave. So some of these stories tell about my imaginings and trying to escape.
In fact, I found it very cinematic. I could just see a movie made of your story. And we would have to know what was going on in your mind, because you tell us what you're thinking at these points. And you, for example, say you can't just get a babysitter, like most people get a babysitter for their child. What was your experience trying? Because sometimes you would have to have somebody stay with you.
Well, we ran through quite a few babysitters, and they all needed special training. So I wound up with a babysitter who was young and inexperienced. And in one of the stories I tell about the hazards of a babysitter who's not really trained. And again, remember, this is 30 years ago, so this is not familiar to people.
Well, you say that you felt you were trapped in a maze. Why don't you look at your book on page 40, Joan, and read us a little bit there, where you describe what it's like. No, you just described this scene, read about this scene where he spills the alphabet soup, and that whole scene is very stressful. You're trying to figure out what he wants. And now you're out in a grocery store.
Well, just a simple, common, ordinary event seemed to be a major incident. With Ian in the shopping cart in his little basket, his sisters and I head to the shortest line next to the rows of candy bars. Ian stops rocking his head back and forth and snatches one. I grab his hand, pry the chocolate from his fist, and toss it on the counter just out of his reach. His face opens into a pit where a trapped animal howls. Ian shrieks, "Hurry," the cashier, who rings up the groceries, including the candy, and yells, "That'll be $15.45 altogether." My hands shake so much I can hardly open my wallet, and I notice my fingers are covered with chocolate from our skirmish. I shout, "Please throw the candy away. Don't want him to have sugar." Then I shove dollars covered with my chocolate prints over the counter. "Here, you paid for this, hon. Might as well let the baby have it." She hands the glob back to Ian, either because she cannot hear me over his howls, or she just wants it to stop. The people behind me in line just want the screaming to stop, too. They mutter under their breath, "Look at that spoiled brat." I prefer spoiled brat to autistic. At least brat is in the range of normal. His sister, Monica, looks up and says, "Everybody's looking at us. Let's get out of here."
My guest, Joan Goudreau, reading from her memoir, Strangers Together, How My Son's Autism Changed My Life. And you know, Joan, as I was reading that, thinking, okay, if I were in that chopping line, I would probably think that too. Look at that woman who doesn't know how to discipline her children. Why isn't she teaching them proper manners? I'm just imagining the things that would be going through my mind before I read this. Now that I've read this, I would think twice before I would want to point a finger at a mother.
Well, yes, I have read this section before to other people, and they always blame the cashier. And they always blame the people in line, but they're on the inside. No, you know, I think myself, you know, before I had Ian, I'd just see a child having a tantrum. I wouldn't see possibly a disability involved.
So you can't really take him out shopping very easily. You can't take you.
It's or hard anywhere.
Yeah, exactly. It's hard to get a babysitter to leave him at home. Hard to take him with you when you go out. So this is why I could see why you'd feel trapped. Mm-hmm. Well, then what kind of help do you seek in the way of professional help for his schooling, for example?
Well, the best thing that happens after his diagnosis is that he goes to Whitehaven Preschool. And this is a wonderful special ed preschool class. He has a wonderful teacher, Paula Broen, and I attend one of the parent meetings. I manage to get some sort of babysitting, and I go to the meeting, and I watch a video with the teacher, Paula, and Ian, and I can't recognize my son because he's following directions. He still doesn't talk yet, but he's following directions, and he seems to be listening to Paula, and I think, well, who is this boy, you know?
That stranger that I don't know.
That's
I
right.
I live with a different son at home, and here's this stranger who's well-behaved and paying attention. And
what's her secret? He looks like a different boy than the Ian we live with at home. We are strangers who live together. We look at each other. But he doesn't see our family. He doesn't play with a sister, just rocks back and forth. He and I come together and push apart like opposite magnetic poles. Silence and screams are his language, and we can't understand. I need help at home to teach me to teach Ian. And so that's when it finally came to me. Well, I'm at that point, I knew it was crucial that I had to get some help for me as well as Ian, help in the home. And so it was a long process, but it was worth it. I went through regional center and through social services, and I got a speech therapist to come into my home and train me as well as Ian for speech therapy. I got a respite worker to come in and take Ian out to the community. And I had some wonderful volunteers. One was a high school girl who would just work with Ian with flashcards and signing.
Well, now, how successful were these young people who would come in? And here you are, the mother who'd been trying to also teach him because you had a background professionally. What success did they have, these volunteers that would come into your home?
Well, being a teacher, I thought it would be easy to teach my own son. I soon learned better that even my daughters were much more direct and much better at connecting in a teaching way. I had to be taught how to teach him. And a high school student, Megan, would come in on Saturdays. And she was very successful because one day, Megan, the high school volunteer, practices signing with Ian. Today she holds...
Signing, now you might explain what you mean by that.
Signing is a system of communication that was first used by hard of hearing and deaf people. But now it's being used in a variety of ways. And it seems as though using your fingers to express letters and words somehow imprints the brain. And so we started to use it with Ian. He couldn't speak words, but he could manipulate his fingers because people with autism are visual. So he could manipulate his fingers to sign various words, even some simple phrases.
Well, one thing that I might ask you about, too, is when you're talking about signing, Ian didn't always tell you when he needed to go to the toilet.
Oh, no. It was all a guessing game. But it was a breakthrough when he learned how to sign. It's kind of a closed fist gesture. And sometimes he uses that sign now, and he's 34. So what goes in when you're young stays in.
Well, that would be kind of handy then if you're with a friend, say, or a family member, and
exactly.
You want to signal that you need to go to the bathroom. You can just sign that gesture.
It's very helpful in church. So Megan was practicing signing with him, and she holds a flashcard picture of a cow. And he makes a sign with pointed fingers to show a horn by his forehead. "Good job," says Megan and smiles. Then he says, "Kawa." I dash for my camera and take his picture. Say it again," yells Megan. And I shout and clap. Ian flaps his hands with excitement. We can't believe that he is talking after all this time. I tape his new words as they explode out of his mouth. Cat, dog, bird. He recites all the rest of Noah's Ark. I play the tape back to his sisters when they come back from their friend's home, and we tape some more. "Say dog," Jennifer commands. "Dog," he repeats. We all laugh, and Monica high-fives Ian. Tonight, after the kids are in bed, I'll listen to this tape again, and Ian's voice will fill the silence of the room.
My guest is Joan Goodrow, and she's reading from her memoir, Strangers Together, How My Son's Autism Changed My Life. And so you might remind people how old Ian is at this point, where you're so excited he actually said these words.
He was about 4 years old, and he had finally come out with some words. Once he started saying words, his vocabulary increased. But I have to say that now that he's an adult, he's about 34 years old, and he's basically nonverbal. He can say basic needs that he wants. But he's not going to carry on a conversation or anything like that. But it was a wonderful start. And you asked, did I have success? And I must say that the people who worked with Ian, I've dedicated the book to the friends and the family and all the wonderful volunteers and professionals that worked with him. I also have to add that I had a circle of support with friends and neighbors. But my best friend didn't offer any advice. She just listened and listened and listened some more. And she accepted our family the way it was.
Well, when you say she didn't offer advice, because it would be tempting, I think, for people to offer advice. I mean, even
I got a lot of advice.
Even from your own daughters.
Oh, yes.
And yet, the expert, you quote it toward the end of your book, admits that even the experts don't have all the answers.
No, I think they're trying to learn as fast as the parents are. And I just received an email from a school psychologist that I used to work with in Southern California. And he said, I never realized what living with a child with autism was like. And here's a man who studied autism. He works with students with autism and their parents. And he never really realized the day-to-day concerns. And I was very pleased to hear this, because one of the reasons that I wrote this book was to help professionals get some insight into what the parents' lives were like. And I have read some of these stories, especially Homework is a chapter that tells about parents and teachers and their relationships. I've read this at education classes at Chico State, and I have really enjoyed getting feedback and reaction back from reading these stories there.
Because most of us can't imagine why you might be late for a meeting. You're all Ian's all dressed, and then all of a sudden his clothes are wet because he didn't tell you he needed to go to the toilet. So everything that seems like it would be simple is not. And you just talk about the quantity of laundry that you have to do.
Yes.
Or the time that you're going to go out to this farm and you'd think you were going away for a long trip, because just a short time, there's so much to think about, all the clothes that you have to take. And how was that visit to the farm?
The visit to the farm was very freeing for Ian and for me as a mother.
Because typically, autistic and your son didn't like new situations. They want familiar situations. So here you're wondering, oh my gosh, here he's going out with this farm. And how did it turn out?
Well, it turned out fine. And I always kind of, by this time, expected the worst. I was always trying to prepare. I was always telling people, oh, this is going to happen and that's going to happen. I think after a while, parents with autistic children, they tend to fear change as much as their children. And when I saw him just kind of going with the flow, and enjoying the relaxed family that he was with, then I was relieved. But also, it taught me, you know, life goes on, and Ian is going to grow, and he's going to change, and it's going to be all right.
Yeah, I really liked the farm couple. The woman was so understanding. Oh. She seemed to have a heart of gold.
She did, and she didn't have an overview of worry and concern and anxiety. And I said, oh, no, he has to have his special plate, Matt, and he has to have his special plate. And she just very casually, you know, guided him through. And I left him with Jim watching football. And, of course, I was afraid of the dog. He would be afraid. No, Ian just kind of curled up and settled right in with the family.
So all these worries that you had before taking him there proved to be unnecessary, because he adapted and he did fine there.
And it opened up my mind, too, to the fact that change can be really good, and unexpected blessings come in all sorts of ways.
Well, your book is about this first year from the time he was diagnosed, this first year that of how you managed to cope with it. And you say that parents feel alone when they're facing these day-to-day problems. And you have kind of a summary toward the end of your book of the progress that Ian made. And you describe this on page 97, Joan.
Changes in routine still upset Ian, but he has made many changes this year. He names the colors of his big crayons and asks for what he wants with three or four words. He says or signs please and thank you, if you remind him, just like any other four-year-old. And he hugs friends back now, another big change. It's been a long year since Ian was diagnosed. The neurologist who first told us that Ian had autism said, "The brain is like outer space, and we're just starting to explore it. We're explorers, not experts. The closest thing to experts are parents, because you know your kids better than anyone else." I don't feel like an expert, but at least Ian isn't the stranger he was a year ago. This past year, I've gotten to know him, thanks to help from others.
My guest is Joan Goodrow, and her book is Strangers Together, How My Son's Autism Changed My Life. And you're saying that you were told you were the expert because you're the parent.
That's kind of scary.
And that seems to be that these children are unique in their experiences and what works for them. There was a recent article in the New York Times Magazine by Ron Suskin, and he said their autistic son seems unreachable until they discovered the language of Disney. He liked to watch Disney videos, and they discovered that this was a way of reaching him, that he would sing along with these Disney songs, and they were. This was an approach. Who would have ever guessed that? It was unique to this child.
It is so mysterious, and the sort of trademark icon is a ribbon with puzzle pieces, not just one color, but puzzle pieces, and it really is a puzzle that's hard to put the pieces together. My son would sit in the preschool, the co-op preschool that he went to in the afternoon, and the kids would be singing songs, and he wouldn't look at them, and he wouldn't sing with them, and he looked like he was just in his own little world. And then about midnight, he would wake up, and of course wake me up, singing "The Wheels on the Bus" and all the other songs that the other kids were singing. So music is a way, but it's always a mystery.
So you have to study your own child and see what might be a way to get through to this child.
There's no guidebooks.
Well, you've said that, Ian, this is 30 years ago. We don't seem to have learned a whole lot about it in those 30 years as far as to how to address these problems. But your son is living on his own now?
He's living in a support home through California Vocations in Paradise, and he's also in a day program. And I must say that there is more support and services for parents now, and I urge them to go to Regional Center and seek out all the help that's available to them.
Thank you. My guest has been Joan Goodrow. Her book, Strangers Together, How My Son's Autism Changed My Life. You can find this and other episodes of Nancy's Bookshelf on our website, kcho.org. I'm Nancy Weekman.
You've been listening to Nancy's Bookshelf. Our theme music is The Mysterious Barricades by Francois Couperin, performed by Warren Haskell. Nancy's Bookshelf is a production of North State Public Radio.